Hey everyone, and welcome to Coffee and Compete, the show about the news, gossip, and tactics of competitive business strategy. I'm your host, Adam McQueen. Join with me as always, the guy at Clue that uses Clue. It's Hunter Stones. Hunter, what's going on, buddy?
Staying alive, just like the Bee Gees. There we go, kicking things off with that.
Oh, I hate that I love you. More importantly, we are diving into more topics around win-loss, and specifically, we are diving into how to get started, how to go from zero to one, and we thought there'd be no better person to join us than Dylan Durso, the Senior Competitive Intelligence Manager at Autodesk. Dylan, thanks for joining the pod.
Awesome. Happy to be here, Adam and Hunter.
Well, super excited for this. Dylan, we have done a lot of work in the past. We have an Autodesk case study. We have learned a lot about your program at Compete Week. Excited to get into a little bit about the win-loss side of your program specifically. So would love to understand, actually, just going right back to the very beginning, like how did you get your start in win-loss? Like when you were going zero to one back in the day, what did that look like for you?
Yeah, so the win-loss program here at Autodesk is really, I guess, as old as my tenure here. So when I first joined, I was fortunate that we were onboarding Clue as our compete platform, but we were also onboarding a different vendor to support win-loss. And I say that as a good thing because any investment win-loss, I think, is really helpful and really worthwhile. That vendor, it didn't work out with them, but we realized the kind of the potential of win-loss a little over 2 years ago. And we saw that, look, this is something we need to invest in because this is getting us information that we just don't have access to in really any other way. And we just need to find the right partner. So the first couple months of my win-loss experience here at Autodesk, we're trying to identify the right partner. But since then, you know, we've hit the ground running, and I think we've completed over 200 interviews in the 2 years I've been here. So very well versed in win-loss now at this point. It seems like a decade of doing it.
Awesome. Well, excited to tap into some of that knowledge that you've been able to learn over the past few years. So let's kind of start at the beginning here. Like for our audience who's listening, a lot of folks here are going to be getting into win-loss for the very first time. So if you're kind of going back to that beginning, if you could start over again, kind of take us through, like, what would your first step be with establishing a win-loss program or even just starting to collect win-loss analysis?
Yeah, I would say one thing that, and I think the biggest learning lesson came on just like who we were partnering with at the time too, but one of our biggest kind of regrets when we started was perhaps not putting in as much time on the onboarding element. And I think with that in mind, when I'm speaking to onboarding, I'm talking about determining who your stakeholders are, so who you're trying to feed insights to. Obviously, there's interest in your immediate team, but who outside of your team is going to benefit from this? And then once you've identified the stakeholders, identifying what they want to know. It's one thing just to know that, okay, I'm going to give this a product, or I'm going to give these insights to customer success. But actually identifying the people within those organizations and what they're interested in learning. I've said this in other things, but like you create your own audience by doing that. So if you're getting people to contribute their thoughts and like what they're interested in learning from win-loss, then you're guaranteeing yourself at least, you know, 2 to 3 to 4 users or consumers of your research down the road. So the onboarding element, particularly in crafting a good stakeholder survey, that's not something we did when we first trialed a different provider for win-loss research. But it was absolutely something we did when we onboarded Clue and kind of ultimately went forward with Clue and have, you know, almost 2 years later now. But that's really my biggest regret when we started, just the amount of time and effort that needs to go into getting all of the prep work done before you even have your first interview.
What kind of questions are you putting into a survey that's going out to your stakeholders, by the way?
Yeah, so we're gauging what are to ranking priorities. So are you trying to understand what's most important to you? Is it why we're losing at the product level? Is it why we're winning at the product level? Is it why we're winning and losing at the pricing level? And then having people kind of rank order those things. That way we're understanding what is applicable across multiple organizations, right? That way it's not just product people saying they're only interested in product, right? Once you see that, oh, sales is also rating product feedback as like at the second level. So we really helps us understand how teams are considering some of those inputs, even outside of their day-to-day work. The other piece of that is also understanding their hypotheses. So understand or assumptions rather for why they think we're winning and losing deals, or why they think about customers and what customers, what their perceptions are. So tracking those assumptions and hypotheses across all those different stakeholders is also really valuable for formulating the types of questions you want to ask and the types of focus you want your interviews to take. That way your end results, whatever your readout is, ends up following that pattern as well.
In terms of this like stakeholder survey, doing the prep work, we just got into questions a little bit, but who's involved? Like, who are the people that you are serving? Who are the people that you want the input to help shape what you're doing from a win-loss program perspective?
I would say cast a wide net, especially depending on what time of year you're doing it, right? Because it's, depending on the size of your organization, surveys might be dreaded. You know, we kind of are somewhere in between. So we have certain months where we're doing other surveys. So we try and avoid that type of thing. So cast a wide net. That way, you know, you're not disappointed if you only get a 50% response or 30% response. And you're still getting 10 to 20 inputs, I would say, is enough to really push you forward. But anything from, I mean, be ambitious. Ask, you know, we ask like our GM of construction, who's kind of like in a CEO role at a really large company, all the way down to just like someone one level above me or someone peers, like what are they interested in? But rather than just like the title, I think the more important thing is making sure it's holistic in who you're talking to. So making sure you're talking to people from product, customer success, R&D, sales, strategy, people that are working on pricing and packaging, because again, you want to create a guaranteed viewer of that analysis at the end of the day. Casting that wide net, and that's really where win-loss starts to open up your compete program into other, it opens the doors into other stakeholders and things like that, that some of like more traditional competitive intelligence efforts might not have as much opportunity to interact with.
You're trying to determine your research objectives, prep work. It's not just dive into a bunch of interviews without a clear purpose, it sounds to me. You're getting understanding what your stakeholders want, who you want on board. But you mentioned there, this is a wide net. It's quite a few different departments. They're probably thinking about a million different things. When you kind of digest this sort of feedback from them, how do you really like whittle that down to very clear objectives?
Yeah, so I think at the end of the day, the CI manager, whoever's managing this too, gets kind of final say, which is nice in that aspect, right? We're the ones who are ultimately pushing it forward. But that's where I think that rank order of priorities really comes into play. So obviously product is going to be the most interesting product too, but if we find out that the rank order actually has, you know, three things that are risen to the top for across every organization, regardless of where they sit, then we're going to make sure we're emphasizing those things. So it's not just enough to say, hey, what's most important to you? That's not going to get you the things you really need to know in order to formulate your research questions and your research topics. Use those rank orders to narrow in there. And then also some things are just not answerable in a win-loss interview, right? Your Clue really tries to make these calls like 20 to 25 minutes with customers. So if you're trying to spend all this time getting into nitty-gritty detail or feature comparisons or feature details, it's probably not the best place for that. But you can always follow up with that customer, especially if they're willing to talk to it, in another piece of research. And maybe you pass that type of research off to the research team within your organization that actually gets into the nitty-gritty details. So, you know, use your kind of your red line to cross out things that you don't think are going to make sense or aren't a great topic for a win-loss interview. Things that are going to be super sensitive to ask a customer in a win-loss interview. So kind of use your best judgment there as well in what you think is achievable. Because I mean, I can't think of anything worse for win-loss than having these high goals and then just dud after dud after dud because you didn't ask the right questions.
With that in mind, the kind of research objective side of things, when you're doing all of this prep work, you've kind of got these objectives. I'm curious, in your case, when you did this prep work, what did it lead you to kind of focus on first with the type of program you built? Was it win-loss specific churn? Were you focused on a specific product line, a competitor cohort? Like, based on that research, what was the focus point for your first, like, launching your program?
When we first launched it the wrong way, we didn't exactly, we didn't have a super narrow focus. And actually, we learned in that effort, because we cast such a wide net, we didn't really have super defined customer segments targeted and things like that. We kind of had pie on our face a little bit in that we we were presenting a lot of findings that were specific to one of our sales segments, our smallest one, and projecting them as like, oh, this is across the board. And we got a lot of pushback, like, well, who did you talk to? Like, this is all territory customers that you're making those assessments on. We're like, oh, yes, you're right. We didn't really narrow in to include mid-market or named and some of these other segments. So when we first launched it, we definitely fell flat in that aspect and kind of our segmentation. So then when we relaunched it, we had a much more defined area of, okay, we want to talk to 10 territory customers. We want to talk to 10 mid-market customers. We want to focus on North America for this sample because we know that, you know, I sit in North America. That might be the lowest hanging fruit for us as far as like being able to interact with sellers for now. And then once this goes well, then we can expand to EMEA or APAC. So narrowing in on the segments and kind of the specifics of who you want to talk to, it is really critical. And that, I think, is a big reason for why our program is more successful today than when I look back at the first kind of report we had 2 years ago. And I would credit Clue for that too, because the onboarding process that they laid out for getting started for Winloss was daunting at first, but it has paid dividends as far as like, because it was so different than what I had done with other providers that I was like, holy cow, they want us to do all of this before we even do an interview. And it was absolutely worthwhile.
I'm curious because, Dylan, in your case, you're working at a large enterprise company. But Hunter, you're also running Winloss at Clue too, like a smaller size startup company. You're running Winloss for the first time yourself. Let me flip it back to you. Like, what were the programs you focused on yourself running Winloss?
We started with a win-loss program. In the past at Clue, we had done churn programs. We had done renewal programs as well. But basically, we did the exact same thing. Like, we follow all of the best practices that we run with our customers. So we did a stakeholder survey internally. It's funny, I was actually going through our stakeholder survey results just yesterday and looking through these. And yeah, we pretty much did the same thing. We narrowed it down to like, these are the competitors that we need to be focused on. It was no surprise. But there were a few things specifically that our product stakeholders and our customer success stakeholders internally were focused on. So basically, we took that, we narrowed it down to what are our research objectives, and that helped us figure out how much of our time do we want to spend on wins, how much do we want to spend on losses, and how do we want to split this up between competitors. We didn't necessarily get down into like segments or anything like that in terms of company size or verticals, but we kind of kept it at the, you know, wins and losses and split between which competitors, and that's kind of where we went. So yeah, that's how we split our stuff up.
It's interesting that it's applicable regardless of size of company, that just having this prep work done ahead of time and that clarity. That's such an interesting example you mentioned there, Dylan, of like sample size. If you don't take into account maybe like segmentation, you can make false assumptions that are going to end up backfiring on you because you're like, if you don't like do detail work on this is exactly who we're going for, or this is how we're going to split the pie here, you're not actually getting a full picture in. I'm curious as well in terms of, so you've got your research objectives, the types of programs you want to go after. What about the types of deals you want to go after for interviews? Is there a clear answer to this? Is it go for biggest deals, most competitive, the ones that you can get your hand on most easily, like how do you think about prioritizing the types of deals you want to get into your win-loss program?
Yeah, so every quarter we kind of like bucket our interviews on a quarterly basis. It doesn't always report that way, but that's how we tend to view it from a sample size. We always have a different competitor or geo in mind when we're setting that out. So that really dictates the competitors that we're interested in tracking, and that then feeds into which opportunities we're most interested in. So, you know, setting out your first kind of net by, okay, any opportunity with this competitor on it, right? But also ones, I think the other element that you have to build in is ones that made it past like stage one or stage two. Ideally, you want it to be as late in the process as possible. That way, you know, the customer has more valuable feedback on, you know, you versus the competitor. That's an important element to work in. I can't tell you how many times we had an account executive push back, say like, yeah, we lost to this competitor, but they never even did a demo with us. And I'm like, oh, okay. So if you're not running the right, including the right parameters in kind of your your source generation or your lead generation, and then you're going to be pretty disappointed in the results, I would say, too. It's going to just create more steps along the way. But yeah, I would say lean on the reporting, and don't be afraid to like change things from quarter to quarter as well. Like, we constantly are changing the competitors we're interested in. That way we're learning new things from quarter to quarter, right? You're running one competitor for an entire year, you're going to hear a lot of echo chamber type things. Like, you're going to hear the same things over and over again. So continuing to refine that. And I would say, obviously, at the end of the day, too, you have to you're limited to the deals that an account executive is going to connect you to, unless you have a really good way of automating this. But especially in a company that's starting in loss, I'm assuming you're not having some robust Salesforce integration built out. So you are relying on an account executive or someone to connect you to that customer. So you are limited at some capacity to who is willing to work with you. So find the account executives that you can kind of count on, the customer-facing teams that you can count on and that you have rapport with, and ask them first, because that can then also help you in the long run, because you can use the work you're doing with a few people to help kind of convince the people that, you know, that might be less hesitant to help you today. So, you know, let your research objectives guide your priorities, but then also at the end of the day, you kind of do have to know, like, an interview that is a high likelihood of being completed is also, you know, what you have to prioritize as well.
And how do you think about getting sales bought into that? You know, if you're going to be leaning on them to facilitate introductions further down the line, when you actually start trying to generate some interview pipeline, how do you think about that idea of getting the sales org on board with a win-loss program in general?
So I think it's very important that you start that process with the acknowledgement that they don't have to help you, right? This is not their day-to-day. This is an extra task for them that you are asking them to help with. So if you come about it like without it being kind of like a, hey, can you do me this favor? Or can you do like a really be really gracious and appreciative if you would help us with this? You're coming about it like, hey, this is a requirement. Unless at your company it is a requirement, but it is certainly not a requirement here. Then you just need to be very mindful of that you're asking them to take on an extra burden. Now the level, if we click deeper into it too, so now that you acknowledge that you're asking them to help you, you also have to make sure that there's something in it for them. So you're not just asking them to do an interview to feed to facilitate a connection to a customer to feed, you know, my analysis, right? I'm doing it so that I can then provide them with the interview summary or the recording of that interview. So if it's a loss deal, they might learn something about that account that's going to support them in the future. If it's a, you know, a happy customer, they can hear, is that customer actually happy? We've identified churn risk and things like that from interviews with wins or renewal wins that the account executive might not have realized that there was a big issue, or it might help us identify a friction point. Everything might be good at the high level, but there is a major issue they're having on a specific feature or product or packaging dynamic. And then we've also used it to actually create net new wins. So we've had churn customers participate in an interview, a churn interview, and they're like, oh, I'm really having a rough time with this competitor product that we churned to. I'd love to come back. But in regular sales cycle, our accounting executive might not talk to that customer for another 6-8 months. However, we were able to pass along like those interview recordings and the summaries to say, hey, look, this customer is very interested. And then we've had that lead to, you know, a new closed deal a couple weeks or a couple months later, 6 to 8 months faster than what it would have had organically. So highlight those examples too, because that's how you get new people on board and show them that there's a reason we're asking them to do this, and we're not just doing it as a self-serving purpose.
I'm writing that one down. That one's going in the back pocket right there.
It's such a good example. And I think it's like showing specifics. Like literally I was in the office, was it last week? And one of our AEs literally said it was either a churn or I think it was a loss report that from a deal that had reopened that he was inheriting now. And maybe it was a loss to like status quo, like some turnover, whatever. But he could just reference the loss notes and he is entering that deal again with so much more context. He came in and it's like, oh, I have a new decision maker. I can get them up to speed with everything. And so you're really like, with whether it's a churn or even a lost deal that might re-enter a sales cycle, if you start to know the typical length of contracts with in your space, literally comes in and he has all of this context. It's like pre-built in discovery that allows him to be in this completely different situation when he enters a sales cycle, which it was just music to my ears hearing that. And it's, I think it's the example you're referencing there on the churn story.
Yeah. Like it's one thing to have like lost notes that you can reference in a CRM, having the entire report where it's, this is exactly what they were looking for. This is the, you know, exact part that didn't measure up.
It was so funny because it was literally a new person. And so our salesperson was like giving them notes that they didn't even know about. It was like, this is what was going on in your business. And like, oh, I didn't actually know that. So that's a great example. Okay. I have a question that I'll give to both. Were you going to say something there, Dylan?
I was just going to say, I think it also builds a lot of rapport with customers, whether it's a prospect or like a current customer as well, because we encourage our account executives. Some of them they'll get the summary. They'll be like, talk to the customer about this and like acknowledge that they participated in this interview on a program you manage. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And we've had customers say like, they were so excited to hear that we were interested in their feedback in this way. And it's actually helped establish credibility for our brand and for just our company or our business that we are interested in the customer's feedback. And it gives the account executive perhaps a new way to engage the customer to say, hey, I know you participated in that interview with Clue and you raised this concern, but let's talk about that because I think this gives us something to, you know, kick off a new sales conversation about for the next year or something like that. So I think it does nothing but bring you closer to the customer as well.
Absolutely. All right. I want to end on this one. I've got for both of you, and I want to get very specific and very tactical here. For our listeners, and they're starting from 0 to 1, as we mentioned, what is one tactical thing that they should definitely do starting from scratch and one thing they should definitely not do? And it can't be just the inverse of what they should do. So one thing that they should definitely do tactically, and what's one thing they should definitely not do? Dylan, I'll flip it to you first.
Okay. One thing you should definitely not do is kick off your outreach to account executives without any prior knowledge that outreach is about to begin. So don't let the first time your account executives know that Clue is going to be asking them to make a connection to a customer. Do not let that be the first time that those account executives and sales managers hear about this effort. You need to make sure you are putting in the time with the sales managers and the account executives beforehand and some type of kickoff call. That way they know to expect that email or outreach from their Clue win-loss manager. And you know, they're in their better footing to have success as far as like leading from a big batch of targets to actually converted interviews. So I gave you the what was wrong with it. I'll also come up with a thing to must do as well. I'll come up with a different one. But let's switch to Honey though. Let me think on that one.
Yeah, flip to Honey. You give me a not do or do, and then I'll go back to Dylan.
It sounds good. Well, first of all, I love that, by the way. Make sure that you've actually, you know, explained what this is going to look like and how it's...
Surprise!
Yeah, exactly. You don't want it to be a surprise. I would say, and this might be a little bit specific to a company of more of Clue size, but one thing that I would recommend not doing is getting way too hyper-specific with the exact type of accounts that you're going to target in a win-loss program. Reason being that depending on how much deal volume you have, it might actually become very difficult to secure that very specific segment of accounts. So I would maybe recommend going a little bit broader with the types of accounts that you're going to be targeting. And then that way you'll probably end up having a larger sample size that you can go after and generating better interviews. And then something I would recommend always doing, stakeholder surveys or stakeholder interviews even, depending on what kind of scale you're looking for. But really starting off with that customer discovery, stakeholder discovery, I see that as being very important for two different reasons. The first is that I think it's going to help you figure out what types of accounts you should be targeting with your research and what kind of research objectives you should have and what your interview guide is going to look like. But two, something that we do every quarter at Clue is our executive summary. And when it comes to that, that's usually a presentation to our SLT and a few additional stakeholders. And we want to be able to deliver the exact insights that they need to perform better in their jobs and to lead their teams better. And so that stakeholder survey ends up, of course, helping us target our research objectives and our interview guide a lot better, but it helps bring a lot of focus to those executive summaries too.
The end outputs too. Dylan, what we got? What's one thing someone should definitely do?
A must do is to start small. If you have to realize the bigger your research objectives are, the more information you're then going to have a report on at the back end. And I don't mean that from like the amount of great insights you have. I mean like the scale of things. If your first win-loss report is 30 pages long because you asked like 20 different topics of research objectives baked into your interview sample, it's going to be very hard to get people to buy into that program to begin with. So start small, focus on maybe one or two or even or three research objectives, probably not more than that. That way you increase your reader, your viewership, people that are interested in the analysis on the back end, because it doesn't just end with the interview, right? You have to take it across the finish line with the analysis of how it applies to your business. So by starting small, you can at least give it, even if it's not answering all the questions, it's answering some of the questions. That's going to build trust in the win-loss, like, as the principle or the concept of win-loss, that it can help you deliver the type of insights you don't have today. And it's then going to build that trust and create like a snowball effect where you have more appetite for people willing to explore new topics in the last interviews. And it's going to keep that interest in what you're doing. And every time, you know, whatever your cadence is, people are going to be eager to consume it and understand how they work and work to incorporate it into their day-to-day as well.
Last question for both of you here. I know we've mentioned research objectives a lot, but I think as well, like to get specific there for listeners, like what's an example when you're saying let's be really tight and have a handful of research objectives, what's an example of a research objective, like specifically, what would that look like? That's something that is... can be a bit more specific and isn't that broad in nature. Like, obviously we don't have to reveal our own, but like if either of you could provide what that looks like for someone that's in there, like, okay, if I'm only gonna set 1 to 3, like what should those even kind of be?
I would say like an example of one could be, why are we losing to these three types of competitors in the enterprise segment? That's like an example of a research objective that targets like upper market and a segment of competitors. So it could be as simple as something like that, or it could even be broader.
Would expand this out too. And I think people get caught up in the win-loss kind of the naming convention there, and do something like, what is the most important decision-making criteria for some of our customers? Or what resources are they leveraging to even find us? How are they hearing about us? And you can, once you start to get into kind of these other dynamics outside of win-loss, why did they go with us? Why didn't they go with us? Those other areas like decision-making criteria, the compelling events, the resources they're leveraging, that's where your program is going to start to get interest from teams and people that you didn't even have in mind when you started your program.
There's actually, again, that's another great example. Hunter shared a win-loss report. This is an example of getting marketing. How did you hear about us? You shared a win-loss report on Slack. You might have tagged me or mentioned me, but the one of our won deals, they heard about us through our YouTube content, which is something that we'd like recently started to invest in more, was YouTube video content and educational stuff. And it was one of the first signals, like we'd seen like traffic growth, follower, subscriber, that's all good. But to see an actual prospect like verbatim being like, I found you through this, as someone in marketing and I'm trying to make my own decisions on how, like where we invest, that was gold to me to be like, oh, it feels real. This is something that will actually help generate pipeline too. So to your point there, that kind of those nuances of not just why we want our loss, but looking at those pieces is where becomes valuable to even more departments.
It's such a good point. I mean, like, you can break down win-loss interviews into so many different components. You can look at selection criteria, evaluation drivers, you know, product strengths and weaknesses, like all these different things. Narrowing it down to maybe a sub-segment of that could be very helpful.
Yeah, and I would also keep in mind, too, some of that stuff might not seem super insightful in the moment when you're only looking at, like, one interview. Like, oh, okay, they learned about us through a podcast. Great. That might not add a ton in that one interview. But 2 years from now, when you have a bucket of 200 interviews, those things you're collecting data points on, when you can say, look, like 75% of customers are finding us through X, that is much more insightful. And you start to see the value of why you're tracking some of these things that might have been lower priority from the get-go, but still have value for the business in the long run.
Absolutely. On that note, Dylan, thank you for kicking off officially season two, the first of 2025, where we're tackling all things win-loss, and I couldn't think of someone better to start things with. So thanks for joining us, and we'll catch everyone next week.